All right, thank you, Tommy. So much of chapter 7 was designated to demonstrating how Jesus was setting up or was a new priest according to a different order, not the Levitical order. So the big picture here in the letter to the Hebrews is showing how the old is passing away. The old covenant, the old law, the old way of doing things is passing away. And a new way has come, and that's been instituted by Jesus, who has been set forth as this new high priest. You know, humanity cannot go and into the presence of God. We have to have some sort of go-between. Okay? We know because of God's holiness and because of our sin and because of the chasm that creates between man and God, several things must take place. One, sin must be atoned for so that one can thus in some sense enter into God's presence. That was done in the Old Testament through the sacrificial system of animals, the sin offerings, the trespass offerings, the burnt offerings. Those atoned for sin to a certain degree that they allowed mankind to have this relationship with God or enter into the presence of God through a mediator, the high priest. So first there must be the covering of sin, then there must be a mediator, a go-between between man and God. Under the old law, it was Old Testament sacrifices, and the priest was the mediator. Under the new covenant, there's a better sacrifice that's going to be brought into effect later on in the discussion. But Jesus has been set forth as the better high priest, the superior high priest, just in various ways, primarily his sinless life, so his perfect ability to mediate, and one of the things that's now being set forth, his ability not just to go into the most holy place where the glory of God dwelt above the Ark of the Covenant, but rather into heaven. So he's better in the sense that he's in closer proximity to God and thus able to better mediate on our behalf. So really what's being set forth here in chapter 8, having already shown that Jesus is this new, better high priest, we're going to see a couple of things. One is a better covenant. That's going to be the focus of chapter 8. And then we're going to, as he starts off doing in the first few verses, talking about the earthly tabernacle, he's going to transition and really pick up on that in chapter 9. So I think initially I said we were going to pick up talking about the tabernacle. I'm going to postpone that part of our study until chapter 9, because chapter 9 just really gets involved with the specific elements of the tabernacle worship and how worship to God was done under the Mosaic system. So we're going to postpone that part of our study. So if you answer that question, hold on to that sheet. We'll reference that when we get into chapter 9. We'll probably make that the first part of our study in chapter 9. I really want to pick up, though, in verse 6 and 7, where it talks about Jesus obtaining a better ministry and therefore setting forth a better covenant. We're going to see why he had to set forth this better covenant. And we'll just pick up our discussion in verses 6 and 7. So verse 6 says, as it is, Christ has obtained a ministry much more excellent than the old, as the covenant he mediates is better, since it is enacted on better promises. So he's transitioning now from superior priesthood to a superior covenant. That is, the old covenant that was worshipped under the law of Moses, in which God was served, and then the new covenant, which we live under Jesus. Okay, so the better in the sense that the new covenant was mediated on better promises. And those will really come into effect in the second part of chapter 8. So, well, let's talk just a little bit about some of the problems of the old covenant, the old law. Because verse 7 says, if that first covenant had been faultless, there would have been no occasion to look for a second. So, in view of the new covenant, in view of what Christ has done through salvation, what was the purpose or what was the flaw of the old covenant? Because the Hebrew writer says there's a fault in regard to what the covenant accomplishes. So what was the fault of the old covenant and what was the purpose of the old covenant?
What runner to lead us to the new covenant?
Okay. To lead us to the new? All right, good. Tommy? Okay, all right, so sacrifices that were inferior and that weren't able to truly take care of sin, good. Jim? Okay, high priests were sinful men, and as has been mentioned, they had to offer sacrifices first for self. Not only that, but they couldn't continue, and that's one of the reasons why Jesus is superior He continues forever. He's an eternal high priest. There's no changing of hands as one high priest dies and passes the baton to someone else. Jesus is the last high priest, first and last high priest according to the new order. Dave? Right. Yep. And that was actually the question that I was well, there's part of the question I'm looking for. That is the purpose. Too, we may bounce back to that. We're kind of more so dealing with this one, so let me just put this one up there. Some of the faults of the Old Covenant. So several things that were pointed out. That is, its inability to reconcile man and God. And Tommy, you touched on that by speaking of the nature of the sacrifices, how they weren't truly able to reconcile man to God. There was no permanent forgiveness. And Paul writes this in Romans chapter 7. Speaking of the old law, he says, "The very commandment that promised life proved to be death to me. For sin, seizing an opportunity through the commandment, deceived me, and through it killed me." So let's flip real quick to Galatians chapter 3. We'll just touch on one passage here.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, but I think I asked two questions and we kind of took off on the other. And I asked both what was the purpose and what were the faults of it. So we've kind of talked about some of the faults. So let me show you now the purpose of the Old Covenant. We're going to Galatians chapter 3. We'll read a few verses here and just make a couple of observations. Maybe you wonder, well, why did the Old Covenant, why was it put in place? Why did God allow people to live under it for 1,500 years? Why not just start with the one that He intended? Okay. Well, there was a purpose in giving the Old Covenant. And we talked about some of its failings and shortcomings and faults. So let's just look here at the purpose of that. Galatians 3, starting in verse 19. So Paul starts off by saying, why then the law? Why the Old Covenant? Why the law? Okay, here it is. It was added because of transgressions, until the offspring should come to whom the promise had been made, and it was put in place through angels by an intermediary. Now, an intermediary implies more than one, but God is one. Is the law then contrary to the promises of God? Certainly not. For if a law had been given that could give life, then righteousness would indeed be by the law. So if there was a law that could save, if man could be saved by law, then it would have been the old law. So Paul's saying, as far as law goes, the old law, the law of Moses, was as good as it gets. However, righteousness, as he says, would be by the law, and that wasn't God's purpose. The scripture, and here's one of the things the law does, one of the purposes of the law, verse 22, but the scripture imprisoned everything under sin so that the promise by faith in Jesus Christ might be given to those who believe. So what the law did is it locked in everyone under sin. Okay, so the law says, don't covet. The law says, don't commit adultery. The law says, don't murder. The law says, love your neighbor as yourself. All 613, thou shall and thou shall not. Okay, nobody can keep those perfectly. Everybody falls short. And so what you have the law doing is just identifying the transgression and then holding everyone beneath it. Okay, all the law can do is point to you and say, you're a sinner. You violated. You've transgressed. That's the purpose of the law. Go back to verse 19. Why the law? It was added because of transgressions. So it locks humanity up underneath sin. Okay, it makes them guilty before God. It doesn't provide salvation. It doesn't provide grace. It doesn't provide strength to live in accordance with the law. All it does is holds man accountable under its accusation for transgressing. Look at verse 23 continuing. But now, before faith came, we were held captive under the law, imprisoned until the coming of faith would be revealed. So, once again, there's the law holding everyone captive, keeping us trapped beneath our sin. Yes, we're the ones that break it, but the law just identifies what's right and what's wrong, and we all do what's wrong, and so it holds us under His power for the purpose, Paul says, of until faith might come. So the law was our guardian, or some texts may say the law was our schoolmaster to bring us to Christ, or until Christ come, in order that we might be justified by faith. So the way in which God is going to bring about humanity's salvation is not by law. It's not by doing. It's not by perfect law keeping. That's impossible. It's through faith. That's the system through which God is going to justify and save humanity. So that's kind of the purpose of the law. It's the schoolmaster that brings us to Christ. It imprisons us under sin, and we'll talk about some more things here in just a moment when we get into the second part of Hebrews chapter 8. So let's flip back to that text, Hebrews chapter 8, and we'll pick up reading in verses 8 through 13. That's the end of the chapter. Okay, Jim, would you mind reading that for us when you get back over there? Hebrews 8, 8 through 13, please. Thank you, Jim. So verses 8 through 13 are a wonderful section of Scripture describing the new covenant, describing the blessings that would be given to the people of God under the new covenant. Back up real quick to verse 7, and let me just make this one last observation before we completely depart this text. Verse 7, for if the first covenant had been faultless, there would have been no occasion to look for a second. So if man could have found salvation under the old covenant, then there would have been no need for a new one. But the whole point of the Old Covenant is that it confined everyone under sin, that there was no salvation under the Old Covenant. There was only condemnation. There was only judgment. Okay, and so that should be indicative of the fact that there's got to be something new and something better coming. We're going to reference a passage here in Jeremiah 31 where Jeremiah speaks about a new covenant that was coming. So the people should have been on the lookout. They should have been aware that what they were doing wasn't working. There had to be something else that God would bring that would restore them to the Lord in the way that they needed to be. All right, verses 8 and 9 right here. You know, was the fault with the covenant, or was it with the people who made the with whom God made the covenant? It was with the people, but with the law, but with the covenant too, right? With the law, because verse you go back and it says, if the first covenant had been faultless, there'd be no occasion to look for a second. So yeah, the people couldn't keep the covenant. They didn't keep the covenant, but there was also fault with the covenant because it couldn't bring about salvation, like Paul talked about in Galatians chapter 3. So with the law, the old law, it could not perfect the people. That's one of the things Jesus is going to be able to do. That's one of the things the new covenant is going to be able to provide, is perfection. Okay, and we'll talk about the dynamic of how that is when we get into chapter 9 in the weeks to come. So real quickly, name some of the occasions, and Tommy, I see your hand. You want to weigh in real quick? Okay, all right. Just a question. Name some of the occasions in which Israel went astray spiritually under the old covenant. There are many, so don't think you're going to give a wrong answer.
They went astray as they were given the
covenant. Okay, you're talking about, the occasion in probably Exodus 32, right? The golden calf? That golden calf. So Moses is on the mountain getting the law. They're eating, drinking, rising up to play. So worshiping the golden calf. Yeah, they not even 40 days in, right? Can you think of any other periods of spiritual apostasy where they broke the covenant? Yeah. How many times did that happen? We studied through Judges. What was it, 7 or 8 or 10 or something like that? It's just this downward spiral of God sends a judge to rescue them. And then there's peace for a time, and then they fall into idolatry. And God punishes them, and then he sends a judge to rescue them, and they fall back into sin. So that's a 400-year period of apostasy on and off. Robert, did you have your hand? What's that?
I was just showing you that Tommy had his hand.
Oh, okay. Yes, sir.
One of the times I think about is when they split the kingdom in two parts.
Okay.
Jeroboam.
Jeroboam led all of northern Israel into idolatry that would ultimately result with their abandonment from God and being sent into Assyrian captivity. Good. They never recovered from that through the actions of Jeroboam. Dad?
Yeah.
So, Robert?
If you back up even
The time they asked for a king. We want to be like the other nations, right? So are you starting to see the picture? How often they went astray spiritually? And that's the point. That's the reason why I asked this question. There are countless occasions for Israel's disobedience, breaking of the covenant, going astray, committing spiritual adultery with other gods. The point being, they were living under the law, okay? And so there was no salvation under it. That's the reason that I asked that question. So it was the covenant that was at fault in the sense that it couldn't perfect them in the way they needed to be perfected. And it was the people who were at fault because they were weak and they went after other gods and they would keep the law for a time, but there was always this breaking of it. So through the prophet Jeremiah, God foretells, "Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will establish a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah." So, anybody get this question? What were the conditions of the old covenant made with the children of Israel? I think that was one that I jotted down for us.
If you will hear my voice, I'll be your God, and if you walk in my way, I'll be your God.
Got it. Yeah. So we could go back, and in fact, I was going to have us do this, but I think I'll just take the shorter route that you provided for us. Essentially, you could jot down Exodus 24, 3 through 8. That's where the covenant was made. Now, a covenant is where two parties come together, and one says, if you do this, then I'll, if you keep this part of the covenant or bargain, then I'll do this thing for you. And the other says, okay, if you do this for me, then I'll do this for you. So, as Dick said, the covenant between God and Israel, God said, if you'll keep my commandments and you'll walk in my statutes, I'll be your God. I'll bless you. I'll take care of you. And for Israel, they were to keep God's laws and his statutes, and then therefore would be blessed. Those were the terms of the covenant. And as we saw, they repeatedly and frequently broke that. So covenants are, I'll do this if you do that. And so it's contingent upon obedience. And so this statement that's made where this new covenant is going to be made with the people, is that it will not be like the covenant that he made with their fathers. So in what sense was the new covenant not going to be like the old? Can you think of a way? I've got one in particular. There may be more than one right answer, though. In what way was the new covenant not going to be like the old? Because that's a statement there.
It'll be different one way. The old covenant was more physical. They had to physically offer sacrifices constantly.
Yes.
The best of the flock, the best of the grain, the best of the fruits of the field. It was a physical reminder. Well, we're more spiritual today.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. We're gonna touch on that. That's a real good point that you brought out about the physical nature of the old covenant versus the spiritual nature of the new. One of the ways that the new covenant was not like the old was conditioned on perfect obedience to the law. If you keep my commandments and my statutes, then I'll be your God. Now we know that they frequently failed to do this, even though God continued to be gracious with them. So what the New Testament does, or the New Covenant does, is it provides and makes provisions for our failing through grace. Okay. God, at any point in time, because of the nature of the covenant, if they would have broken it, could have cast them away and said, you know what, you violated the covenant, I'm done with you. And he did cast Israel away, and he sent Judah into captivity for 70 years, although he didn't, in his grace, completely cast them away. However, there's provision for our failings in the new covenant through grace, meaning when we break the terms of the covenant, we disobey God, he doesn't cast us away, okay? But rather, he forgives us when we repent. And you also notice about the old covenant was, I'll do this if you do that. But as we're going to see in verses 10 through 12, God does not stipulate the new covenant on the basis of obedience, okay? The new covenant tells man what he must do. The new covenant tells us what God has done. Okay, so that's one of the major differences there. The old covenant says this is what you must do. The new covenant says this is what God has done. Did you notice as we were reading through this that God says in verse 10, I'm going to make this new covenant with the house of Israel. I will put my laws in their minds. I will write them on their hearts. I will be their God. They shall not teach each other his neighbor and his brother know the Lord, for they all shall know me. I will be merciful to their iniquities, and I will remember their sins no more. So, terms of the old covenant, you do this, 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 and this. Terms of the new covenant, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, okay? So the old covenant tells man what he must do, and the new covenant tells us what God does. Now, let me offer this caveat. That does not mean that obedience is not important and that God doesn't care about our obedience and doesn't care about our compliance. But here's where the distinction lays. He is the impetus under the new covenant. He is the impetus and he is the catalyst of salvation under the new covenant. Okay? He is the impetus and he is the catalyst of salvation under the old, new covenant. Under the old, you could be saved if you kept it. Under the new, we're saved because of the things that he has done. We're going to see later what he calls us to do in response to that, but he is the impetus and the force behind salvation. Okay. Now, you see something similar taking place with Abraham. If you were to reference, and just for your own records, you may jot down Genesis 15, 7 through 8. There's an occasion where God makes a promise to Abraham. And what he tells Abraham to do is get some of these animals, and he says, get a dove, and there's some other animals. I can't remember if it's a goat or oxen or whatever it is. But he gets several animals, and he says, cut them in half. And so he cuts them in half and sets the pieces. And this was an old time practice in which two people made a covenant. That is, they were going to enter into agreement together, and so they cut the animals into pieces and then walked down them side by side. Okay, that was a very solemn, picturesque way of saying, we're going to do what we bound ourselves to do. Okay, so he tells Abraham, get those animals in place. Then a deep sleep falls on Abraham. And as he's in this sleeping, visionary state, whatever it is, he sees this cloud and this smoking pot of fire walk through the pieces of the animals. Abraham doesn't go through. The presence of God represented by the smoke and the fire goes through. This is a similar thing of what you have here. This New Testament, New Covenant kind of means of working, where he doesn't walk, say, Abraham, walk with me, we're gonna do this. He walks through the pieces and says, Abraham, this is what I'm going to do for you. Okay, that's what New Testament, New Covenant salvation is. It's God being the impetus, God being the force. And yes, we have a part to play like Abraham. We need to trust God. We need to walk by faith. But God is the one who is the work behind the salvation that comes into being. Comments or questions on verses up to verse 9, 10? Steve?
Can you think of an occasion where Jesus said that way is going by the wayside? Conversation he had with the woman? Yeah. Woman of Samaria? Yeah. This mountain is that mountain. Gerizim or Jerusalem? Where should we worship God?
He says, a woman's coming. An hour is coming, woman. We're neither at this mountain nor that will you worship the Father. So he's removing that geographical barrier, like Steve said, of where God was to be worshipped. And those who were going to worship would now be done in spirit and truth. And Tommy kind of touched on the spiritual nature of that too in some of his earlier comments. So we'll pick up in verses 10 through 12 next week and talk about some of the promises that are given under the new law and the new covenant, where we're going to see the way that God works in the life of his people. So go ahead and be reading about that. And there's a couple of questions that will direct that part of our study. And I'll have a handout for chapter 9 next week as well.